Now, we've been starting off in Hebrews chapter 6, verse 12, just by way of reminding us that we be not slothful, but followers of them who through faith and patience inherit the promises. Now, the word patience there doesn't mean like while you're waiting for a train or something. It means ability to endure in a stressful situation. I wonder if any of us have ever experienced anything like that. Yeah, most days. Most days God says to you, do you trust me? And then comes out with creative ways to test our faith. And faith is one of those things that as he tests, it grows. And he wants that. We looked at 1 Peter, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, which says that the testing of our faith is precious in his sight, and good things happen when he tests our faith. When he brings us through these different life journeys where we have to rely on him. And it always is good. Now it seems at the time, I know if something really traumatic is happening, you know, I see sometimes people get saved and then they're up against it. In one way or another. And I always think, Lord, they just got saved. You know, like I gotta tell him how to run the universe and how to run his church, because he doesn't really know, and he needs some tips from time to time. He's always appreciative when I help him out, right? Not at all. But what he's saying is, to me, when I pray like this, I think he's saying to me, is like, they need to know right off the bat who's God and what I can do for them. And you think it's tough, but I'm bringing him to the place where, and I look back at times in my own life where really incredible things have happened, hard things. I never want to go through that again. I look back and I said, boy, wasn't God close at that time? Anyway, so as we go through Hebrews 11, now we get out to verse 25. Talking about Moses, verse 24 says, by faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He was next in line for the throne. He was going to be Pharaoh. So he went for it, right? No. Verse 25 says, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Yeah, he could have been Pharaoh, the ruler of the biggest, baddest country on earth at that time. And he says, nah, no thanks. Rather suffer affliction with these group of slaves. Because he saw the outcome of that. Some of us haven't figured that out yet. I know a lady who has had a hotline to God, and God said this, and God said this, and God said this, and God said this. And I think, well, didn't he ever say stop using drugs and alcohol? Didn't he ever say stop being promiscuous? I mean, in all this talking to you, you think that might have been one of the messages one of the times. No, faith, it looks like something. I know sin is pleasurable for a season. If it wasn't, it wouldn't be a problem. You know, there's nothing in the Bible says don't eat broken glass. Most of us figured out that wouldn't be where we want to be. So God says, they'll figure it out. And he doesn't write a commandment. But there is a commandment. Don't steal. Don't gossip. Don't commit adultery. He knows who we are. He knows where we live. And Moses says, no, you know what? I can have all the sin, all the pleasure, wine, women, and song that I want. And at the end, I'm going to stand before God. And I'm planning for that day. What do you want when you stand before God? What do you want that to look like? Aim for that. And then just work your life backwards so that when you stand before God, it's going to be, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of the Lord. Not that we're working for salvation, not that we're earning our salvation, but there's going to be a judgment. And we're going to talk about that entering in, because that's what that's our portion today. What he did was he esteemed the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. He figured it out, and he got it right. People look at us, all those rubes. Look at all the fun they're missing. For a season. And but sin, and I've said this only about a billion times, choose to sin, choose to suffer. It catches up with us. For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. He figured it out, in other words. He figured out God knows how to bless. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who was invisible. Now we looked at that right at the beginning. Verse 1, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. You haven't seen God. Most of us wouldn't claim that we saw God. How do you love him so much? How do you obey him so much? You read the story. You saw these, and you think, like, I'm going to stand before him someday, and I want that, well done, thou good and faithful servant. I want to. I think he's going to reward me. I respect that he has my best in mind. So forsaking Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, that's part and parcel of everything we do. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. Now, we look back and we say, well, of course, it had such a good outcome. You know, after the firstborn died, they said, hey, get out of here, and he was free, and, you know, and then there was the Red Sea, and they walked through on dry ground, and then the Egyptians were trying to do that. It's going to come up on all this. I'm kind of walking over my own self, but gotta remember something. He never read the story. He didn't have a Bible that said this. He was writing it as he went. I mean, it's easy. You know the apostles, they're in the storm with Jesus, right? Terrified. But if they had read the story, if they knew how it was going to end up, I mean, think. Jesus says to the storm, hey, be muzzled, is literally what he said, like you'd talk to a dog. And suddenly, listen, your bathtub doesn't even do that. When you're taking a bath and you get out of it, it takes a little while for the water to, I'm just thinking, suddenly, nothing. And they're like, wow, who is this guy? This is crazy. But imagine if they knew that before. They've been having the time of their lives. They're all balancing on the gunwales of the ship, just riding like a wild bronco, just enjoying the ride because I know how this ends. But the problem is like when you step out in faith, you know, David and Goliath style faith, you haven't read the story yet. You're writing the story as you go. And that's the problem. But you have to, by faith, see who is invisible. And you have to have respect under the recompense of the reward. You have to step out. Okay, we're going to do this. Interesting to me that if you were in Passover and you were an Egyptian behind a door that had blood in it, you're good. God's no respecter of persons. If you were an Israelite and you were out wandering around and you didn't have blood on your door or anything like that, you're not under the... You see what I'm saying? You actually had to do what God had required, because God didn't... The death angel or the Lord himself, it's obscure, you don't always know. Nobody knocked on the door. Okay, are the Jews in here? Are the Egyptians in? No. Blood on the door. And they weren't destroyed. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians, a saying means attempting to do, were drowned. Again, they never read the chapter. And that took a lot of guts about faith. I think it was presumption for the Egyptians to follow. They didn't have any promise that God would, the people of Israel did. See, that's the difference between faith and presumption. I just think it's going to turn out, because we talked before, oh, you see these movies, oh, you just got to have faith. It always shows me they have no idea what they're talking about. Faith in God, not faith in faith. The Egyptians, they said, well, if it's what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Not necessarily so. Go swimming in all your battle armor and chariots and horses and all. Now, verse 31, I wanted to kind of get here because this is one of my favorite stories in the whole Bible. By faith, the harlot Rahab. Now, some people argue and say, well, She wasn't necessarily a harlot. You know, in the Old Testament, she was an innkeeper, blah, 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 blah. No, the word here in the Greek means the world's oldest profession, a prostitute. She was a friendship seller. That was the deal. So why am I making a deal of that? Because the Bible makes a deal of that. She perished not with them that believe not, because she had received the spies in peace. Now, she's a prostitute who lives in a wall in a place called Jericho. Jericho is interesting to me. It's the promised land, okay? They crossed over. They've gone over Jordan. They're in the place where God said you're going to inherit. Now, some people think of crossing Jordan as like death and we're going to heaven. And No. Because when we go to heaven, we're not fighting giants. We're not involved in battles with chariots and none of that, okay? What I think it's a picture of, and we studied Joshua, and you remember, it's a picture of inheriting our promises. The promised land is us, a picture of us inheriting what God has for us. What's that going to take? Oh, it's going to take faith. Oh, you're going to need some faith. Yeah. And the first thing you do, you cross Jericho, and you see this walled city that they raced chariots on the top of this wall. Here you are, you have a bow, maybe, some arrows, you have a spear, you have a sword. And you look at that wall and you're saying, now what? Now what? I'm going to call in some F-18 airstrike. No. We're going to lob some artillery. No. You just have the weaponry that is not, you don't think it's going to carry the day, and you have God. Rahab understood that. So she said when the spies came, she colluded with them and helped them out. She takes all our excuses away. Don't you understand that? Now, she may have had some moral issues. Can I say that? But she had faith. Now, I want to talk about moral issues for a second. I discovered this in the back of my Bible because I took all my stuff out so I didn't. You can't see it from there. I'm just going to describe it. I found this in my Bible. I took all my stuff out so when I went to the pastor's conference, it wouldn't all fall out and stuff. So I put it and I picked it up and I said, huh, I kept one of those. This is the Cure Tour. We gave out like a billion of these. You remember? Now, you can't see it, so you have to go by faith, okay? Or I'll show it to you later. This pastor here held up this pastor here at knife point in a drug deal. I'm not lying, and I'm not telling tales out of school, because at the Cure Tour, he told us about that, which was news to me. Now, I was, some of you guys remember talking about faith times and tests and trials. Me and Suze were in the intensive care unit, or critical care unit, I can't remember which one, at the hospital. Our granddaughter had been there, she'd overdosed, and it was a bad day. And my granddaughter's other grandmother, I was talking to her about Pastor A and Pastor B. Well, it's Aaron and Travis, okay, just two biggest cities in the state, the churches they pastor. And I was talking to her about that. I don't remember why. And she's, oh, I don't think I'd like to meet him. And I just didn't say anything because I knew he was coming to pray. Because Aaron was in Calvary Chapel in Bangor. Ken had him sharing. And he came the next morning and prayed for my granddaughter. He wanted to talk to her, but she was still in that chemical-induced coma. So she was still under medication at the time. So he prayed over her. And he was, when I got there, he was talking to my other grandmother, my granddaughter's other grandmother, Lala. That's what my granddaughter always called her, Lala. Her name's Linda, but anyway, Lala. So anyway, he was praying, and she was talking to him, and he left, and she said, oh, that was the best guy. And she went on and on about what a great, godly, wonderful man he was. I said, remember the guy I told you, he held up the other pastor at knife point? You just met him. And she was like, what? Why am I telling you these stories? I got to tell you something. Your past doesn't matter. I don't care if you were a prostitute. You know, sometimes people come, they've got to talk to me. And I think they got to like I'm Father Confessor, I got the collar on, and I'm, you know, going to give them absolution or something. Listen, Bible says confess your faults one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. And if you have to do that for some, then go ahead. But I'm not interested in your sinful past. It doesn't mean anything. It really, really doesn't. You can pastor. It doesn't even disqualify you from being a pastor. Well, it might in some circles, but Calvary Chapel, we're a different breed of cat. But so where were you? What did you do? It doesn't matter. It's under the blood. I don't care. I'm not taking notes like, this person was loosely moral and they're a bad person. Every one of us. I don't go on and on about my own past. Why? It's under the blood. Do you understand? It's a new day in Christ. I don't care if you're Rahab the harlot. So what happens with her? Well, so think of this. Joshua, and he talks to his generals. Hey, staff meeting. Y'all get here. Yeah, what's going to happen? Well, we're going to circle the city. You know what? I ran into the captain of the Lord's host. What? Yeah. He told me to take my sandals off. I was on holy ground. You mean like Moses? Yeah. So it was almost like the burning bush, same guy. Wow, what'd he tell you? We're going to circle the city. We're going to siege. Nobody can get in, nobody can out. No, that's not it. We're going to circle the city. We're going to march around it. Then what? Nothing what? That's it. And we're going to do that for 7 days. On the seventh day, we're going to do it 7 times. Yeah. Then what? We're going to blow a trumpet. The wall's going to fall down. Why didn't I think of that? Oh, of course we are. But they didn't. Oh, it was faith. You know, some people do this like Jericho March faith thing. I'm in. I'm all in. Well, we actually physically do it. That's not the point. The point is that they did this. And they blew a trumpet. And what is stopping you from inheriting your promises? Oh, it's big. It's scary. There's no possible way this is going away until you apply faith, until you do what God's called you to do. Because God never met a Jericho that he couldn't, ain't nothing to me. I spoke the worlds into existence. You got that part right. You do know that this, your Savior, God, spoke and everything is. And he's looking at that city and saying, oh, I wish I could find a way to not at all. It might be big to us, but to him it's like, not so big. Rahab got it, the rest of them didn't. By faith the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believe not when she had received the spies in peace. So she gets, after the walls fell down, somebody says, hey, go get Rahab. He sends the 2 spies after her, and they go and collect her. And then she becomes part of Israel. Of course, she plied her trade and lived happily ever after, right? No, she's a new woman now. And figure this out. One of the princes in Judah, a man named Salmon, married her. You're saying, you're kidding. No. And they had a child. You know him. His name is Boaz. You mean Boaz of Ruth and Boaz? It's the very same. They had a child named Obed, who had a son named Jesse, who had a son named David. Wait a second. This prostitute is in the lineage of King David. Jesus Christ is in the lineage of David. And his great, many time great-grandmother is a lady named Rahab. Be prepared to be scandalized by God's love if you really want to follow him. It's nothing you've ever experienced before. He's God is very respectable, isn't he? No. I want to tell you how scandalous it is. He hangs out with the riffraff, the likes of you and me. What more shall I say? Now, it's a time thing with the writer here. What more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, of Barak, of Samson, of Jephthah, of David also, and Samuel, and of the prophets. So we move from the Exodus and the Pentateuch, and we moved into Joshua, right, with the walls of Joshua falling down and Rahab. And now we're into the book of Judges, Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah. Now, I want to talk to you about these four guys before I talk to you about the last two. Gideon was kind of a coward. Remember, he's in the wine press threshing the wheat. And then when God says, okay, I want you to go, and he keeps putting this fleece in front, go, oh, are you sure, are you sure? Well, if you're really sure you're going to do it this way, oh, man, if you're really sure you're going to do it. And then he finally steps out in faith and has a tremendous victory against overwhelming his force of 300 against Midianites. I think there was 700,000 or something, like a big number. And they won the day. Why? Faith. Perfectly respectable guy, kind of a coward, and God used his life anyway. I don't care about cowardice and things like that. I don't care about a checkered past. This is what we're taking away from these. You say, I don't have no prostitute. That's fine. Well, I don't have a bad past. Yeah, but are you kind of timid to step out? You know what I mean? You're going to find yourself here on one of these people. How about Barak? Barak's great, right? Sisera and Jael and all that. You remember? He goes up against them. He's not without Deborah, he didn't. He says, listen, if you ain't going, I ain't going. He needed a woman to go and fight his battles with him. To the point where she said, okay, God's going to deliver Sisera into the hands of, but not you, not a man, a woman. And it turned out to be a Jael. Great story. I love the book of Judges. A lot of sword play, a lot of violence. Everyone ends up dead. I love that because something in me thinks that's wonderful. But the stories of faith, great battles and things. And Barak is one of those stories. How about Samson? Samson is a colorful character. He did a lot of things. I don't know that he actually delivered Israel. In the end, he killed more Philistines in his death than they ever killed in his life. And he has, it's an interesting story. It's a lot of hijinks and stuff like this, but we know him best for Samson and Delilah. He was strong physically, had supernatural strength. I don't think he worked out, and they always get like a Victor Mature actor to play him. Now it's some sort of muscle boy or something like that in the later retelling. So I don't think I think his strength was supernatural. He didn't get it at the gym. He got it from God. And then, you know, there's the whole story about, hey, the Philistines are upon you, and he breaks up the bowstrings, and he just breaks them like nothing. And he, well, if you weave my lock into the locks into the loom, and it's all colorful and stuff like this. But he finally tells her, hey, if you shave my head, I'll be like any other man. I know he was heading for a haircut, and Satan will take whatever you give him, I'll tell you that right now. And he wakes up and he thinks, I'm just going to go like every other time, but he didn't know that the Lord had departed from him. This is a man of faith? Yes. Not perfect faith. See, this is the thing. You may have moral failings, and maybe things you're struggling with. He was mighty in battle, but he wasn't mighty in keeping his lust to a level where it came and it bit him. I told you again, choose to sin, choose to suffer. And our boy Samson's if I'm talking on men's group, you know what I mean, about, I very often talk about Samson. Guys, you gotta win that battle, or you're gonna end up, first the binding, then the blinding, then the grinding. You know the end of his story, right? Don't want that. What are you gonna do? This is a battle you have to win. But in the end of it all, he's a man of faith. He turned to the Lord, and God, as he's doing the grinding, I don't know, there's something you've been grinding over and grinding over and grinding. This is a great place to build faith. At the cost of your eyes? I hope not. Remember Jesus said about, he was talking about adultery, and he said, and I know people would say, well, I got eyes, don't I? Pluck them out. It's better you should go into the heaven blind than seeing enter into damnation. get rid of the sin, whatever the cost. And Jephthah, he's a man of faith, right? He's the one who made the vow concerning his daughter. Whatever comes out of my house when I come home, I'll sacrifice to the Lord. I'm thinking, what does he live with, lambs or ox in his house or something? What was he thinking? Well, she came out with dances and with tambourines, and he's, oh, I can't believe it. You've brought me very low. And now whether he actually kept that vow or not, subject to debate, you can do with that as you will. But think about that. Lord, if you, I don't remember what Moabites, I think, but I might be wrong. It might be Edomites, might be Moabites. I know it was a Jordanian group. Anyway, he said, Lord, if you, maybe it was the Ammonites. Anyway, whatever, you put this group into my hand, if you deliver them in my hand, then I'll do this. And he makes the vow. Like, you know, you have to vow to God and you have to promise him something before he does anything for you, right? Exactly wrong. Exactly wrong. Wrong. So I can't tell you how wrong that is. And this is a man of faith? Yeah, ultimately, yeah. Again, perfect faith. We look at the judges, there's no perfection here, but I trust God. Okay, I trusted him not as good or great as I should have or could have. Do you believe God? Do you believe he'll get you out of your situation? Whatever it is. And now let's talk about David and Samuel and the prophets. David's a good guy. You say, good guy. I mean, he kind of killed somebody, didn't he? He committed adultery in a big way, didn't he? Yeah, but he was a man of faith. He knew how to repent. He knew how to make mistakes, tragic, bad, horrible mistakes. They knew how to turn back to God. And I think from David, we get this. So, you know, because you think, Adam, you don't know what I've done. And I said, again, I don't care. But was it worse than David? Did you really take a man's wife and then kill the guy? This is a man after God's own heart, right? Again, he didn't keep that lust thing in check. He had a problem that way, and he didn't. But sin is one thing. Faith is another thing. And I'm not saying sin. It cost David so much. Remember when Nathan came to him and he told him that story about the traveler and the sheep, and that guy's got to die, David said, because he was in his anger and he was in his flesh, because he had been a shepherd. And then he thought about it and thought, the Lord says, well, he's going to have to pay it back fourfold. You're the guy. Did he pay it back fourfold? Yeah. His daughter Tamar was ravished by his son, who was later killed by Absalom, who later rebelled against him. And then, of course, the son that was born of him and Bathsheba died, fourfold counted. But he was a man of faith. Now, it was a very disappointing time in his life. And again, I say, choose to sin, choose to suffer. I'm not saying, go ahead and sin, it's all good. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it doesn't, faith is one thing, sin is another thing. So we're struggling with sin. You know what the outcome is? Trust God. Trust God. Lord, deliver me from this. I don't want to be a pervert in like Samson or David. I don't want to take somebody's life. I don't want to pay for my sin. You pay for my sin. I don't want to do it anymore. Can you make me the man you want? Can he do that? Somebody say something. Somebody say amen. Somebody say. Because I'm telling you, He takes you just as you are, but he loves you so much, he won't leave you where you are. I'm telling you that from my personal experience. Okay. So, and Samuel is a good guy. That's all. He's not a bad guy at all. He's like right up there with like Joseph and like, Isaiah and the few, like Daniel, like a few choice people in the Bible, no sin is recorded about Samuel, whatever. Now, his sons weren't so good, but he was a man of faith. And, you know, I know, personal testimony again, I know people who step out in faith, who love the Lord, who serve the Lord, who have faith, whose children aren't what they're supposed to be, present company included. I got a good son. I told you, I have Cain and Abel. I got a good son. I guess the son is still writing his story. Does that change my faith? No. I mean, no, people make decisions, and I live with the decisions that are made. First to last, you have to, but I'm going to still trust God. And I think that's the way forward, I mean, in all situations. And so he's, time will fail me to tell you about all these, but who, through faith, subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promise, stopped the mouths of lions. And you can think of, in each case, subdued kingdoms, yeah, I know, David, right, Jephthah, others as well. You know, he just mentioned Barak, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness. Well, that's a long list, okay? But you can think of a lot. Obtained promises. Again, that's a long list too. And stopped the mouth of lions. So I can think of four right off the top of my brain without hardly even trying. You say, well, Daniel in the lion's den, then you're running out, aren't you? How about Benaiah, one of David's mighty men who went down into a pit on a snowy day and killed that lion? You remember that? How come it's always got to be a snowy day when you're lion hunting? Because God wants to show you, hey, I'm with you through all this. And you're thinking of Samson. Remember, he was delivered from the mouth of the lion. He killed the lion. And how about David? You know, it's funny to me because I was reading this week. I tell you, when I go down to the East Coast Pastors Conference, I'm always reading the story of David and Goliath. It always falls on that time. So I was reading it, and he's going to Saul, and he says, hey, you know, I killed a bear and a lion, and that this uncircumcised Philistine is going to be like one of them. Remember that? But I was reading in the ESV, I think, and it says, that both bears and lions is in the plural. Now, one is enough. In my trophy room, I have like a giant's head and a lion and a bear. I got a good trophy room, right? No, he's got lions and bears. Wow. Oh, my. That's crazy, right? Just one lion. And he says, you know, I grabbed it by, he took one of my lambs. What was that lion thinking? And I grabbed it by the beard, and he turned around, and I slew him. What do you have in his other hand? Like a knife or a sword or, I don't know. Like, because I'm thinking, like, if a lion's running off of one of my lambs, I better love that lion a whole lot and not care about my life. Or I got to have a lot of faith. Because I got to tell you something. Lions do run off with lambs all the time. We have an adversary. He's a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. What are you going to do? Oh, well, it's time for faith. They stop the mouth of lions. They quench the violence of fire, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Escape the edge of the sword. Again, that's a big long list. Out of weakness were made strong. We can say Gideon, put him there, others as well. Waxed valiant in fight. Because they're all, you know, when God talks about them, he recounts them as mighty men of valor. God gave them the strength. You don't think, like, when the, after Jericho, right? They muster the troops, and the commanders are counting them all, and they realize they haven't lost any people. Zero, okay? Now, when you attack a major city like that, and you're basically a bunch of farmers and herdsmen, and you were slaves, you think that battle's going to be, okay, we're going to, I'm not saying we're going to get our hair messed up. We may win this, but how many people are we going to lose? And, you know, when generals actually figure this out, they're thinking about, okay, we're going to take this Tarawa or Iwo Jima or these island hopping Marines and stuff like this, we're going to lose 20,000 here. We're probably going to lose 25, 30,000 here. And they actually go through all that. Well, when God does it, he's saying, okay, in this battle, I'm going to lose zero. In this battle, I'm going to lose zero. In this battle, nobody. In this battle, nobody's going to die. And the only time we see in the whole book of Judges is anyone dying is in Ai, the presumption of Ai. And that's a story for another time. And so I'm thinking, waxed valiant in fight. God, you did that. And he's saying, well, I always do that. Ultimately, I always do that. Yeah, I think the guy who does the heroic thing, the Sergeant York, the Medal of Honor winner, he was terrified. And he probably stepped out on faith, prayed, and did what had to be done. But it makes them sound like they're all these larger than life. Oh, I don't care about death. Oh, come and get me, you won't. Yeah, they're just guys. They're just guys who are saying, okay, this is what God's called us to do. Let's do it. And that's what we have to figure out first to last. They wax valiant in fight, turn to flight the armies of the aliens. Women receive their dead raised to life again. How come men don't receive their life, women? Yeah, I just think it almost always involves women. You got to remember Elijah, and it was the widow of Zarephath, her son, that was raised from the dead. And by the way, there was no case study on that. This is the first time it ever happened. Elisha raised that lady he was staying with. I can't remember where she was from. Anyway, there's the husband and the wife there, and she had no child. And then she, you know, Elisha prayed for her, and she had the child. And then he died, and he had the headache. You remember all that story, right? And he raised that child from the dead again. And then we see in the New Testament, Jesus raised Lazarus, who wasn't a woman at all, but basically on behalf of Martha and Mary, don't you think? And the widow of Nain's son, again. Because women are always about resurrection. I don't know, but women receive their dead raised. And then even Dorcas, Tabitha, I like Tabitha better. When he raised her from the dead, it was on behalf of the widows, you know, saying to Peter, oh, look, she made all these things and everything. And so women receive their dead raised to life again. Now here it takes a turn for the worse. Others were tortured. Wait a second. I want to stop the mouth of lions. I want to be delivered from the fire. I want to turn the aliens to flight. I want to wax valiant in fight. And well, yeah, okay. But faith looks like something, and it doesn't always look like victory in the present. Ultimately, it always is, but sometimes it's tortured. Was Pastor Wormbrand a great man of faith? I'm here to tell you, yes. I listen to the Voice of the Martyrs, and I've always advocated you should listen to that. It has the firsthand testimony of people who were tortured, who, like, yeah, Jesus is worth it. When people come to salvation in these lands, they know they're going to face, their family's going to turn from them. It may mean imprisonment. It may mean death. It may mean torture. And they say, okay, whatevs. I'm following Jesus. I don't make it sound like it's nothing. It's a big something. Some were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they may obtain a better resurrection. If you knew you were going to be killed for your testimony of Jesus Christ, would you still do? Would you still be a faithful witness to him? I can tell. You say, yeah. I know he's going to say, Oh, no, I just say, Jesus who? I don't know any Jesus. We know the right answer, but I'll tell you how you, because a lot of you are saying right now, you say, I don't know. Adam, I'm going to be honest with you. If push came to shove, and they say, listen, if you name the name of Christ, we're going to kill you rather badly, and this is how we're going to kill you. Adam, I don't know if I'd stand. I can tell you, if you will live for Christ, you will die for Christ, okay? If you won't, I like the pleasures of sin for a season. I like doing my own thing. I'd rather do what I want to do. No, the answer is no. I'm just telling you. Lovingly is best as I know how. I'm telling you. If every day you're saying, Lord, I'm going to follow you no matter what, sometimes no matter what is hard to take. Tortured, not accepting deliverance that they may obtain a better resurrection. Adam, is there a better resurrection? Yes! That's what the whole book is about. All the warnings, you know, hey, don't go back. It's no good back there. And he's warning them. No, it's all about obtaining a better resurrection. It's all about the rewards to go with. That's the whole book is about. Are there better resurrections? Listen, you may come into heaven just by the skin of your teeth. I hope you're in heaven. You may come in with your britches on smoking or something like that. Well, it's heaven still. You may be, there may be an abundant entering in. I don't know, you know, I try to structure my life this way. I think about this in a kind of obsessive fashion. Every day that we have life, it's a new opportunity to advance your cause, to better your report card, to get more rewards that at someday you'll cast them at Jesus' feet, these crowns that you get. I want a better resurrection. I don't know how else to say it. I've said like two times. This will be the third time. I want to stand before God and have him say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of the Lord. I'm aiming for something. And then I'm like I say, that's the goal. And then I'm trying to take the steps that I think is going to get me there. And by the way, the big step, the biggest one of all is faith. Initial faith that gets us saved and faith that keeps us always in the will of God. It's not negotiable. It's not negotiable. Well, the first one, I kind of wish they'd it was online, because I can't remember the guy's name, but his father was a pastor in Damascus, and he was telling us some real horror stories where accepting Christ meant brutal, horrible death. And people were willing to endure and say, okay. And they had that video. That was, I know it was actors and stuff, but it was visceral. It was like, you kind of entered in, and I was thinking, you remember that? That was powerful to me. It's not, here we're talking about it, we're sharing the gospel in Disneyland, right? It's America. What is your great, great, persecution look like? People on Facebook, they defriend you. Right? I mean, it's not that big a deal, really. I tell you, we're only one or two elections away from knowing real persecution. That's a story for another time. But they didn't accept deliverance that they might attain a better resurrection. Others had trials of cruel mockings. Well, and scourgings. Well, the writer of this book, if you ask me, he knew a little bit about that, right? Yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. And I know there's health and wealth gospel, and every time, no matter what verse they look at, it always turns into God wants to prosper you and make you a gazillionaire and give you health and wipe your runny nose and just wants to make you so wonderfully blessed. I don't know what they do with verses like, well, I know what they do with verses like this. They skip them. That's what they do. They never talk about them. That's what they do. And then, of course, if you're going through something, you're really struggling. You're really up against it. You know whose fault that is. That's your fault because you don't have enough faith. You just, whatever happens to you, you earned it. And that's all I'm saying about that. Others had trial of cruel mocking, scourging, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. I don't know. I'm a Calvary Chapel pastor. I've never even been to jail. I'm visiting, yes, but never like, you know, incarcerated. I don't know how they... I don't even know how it happened that I got, people say, you don't even have a tattoo. I know, right? Sadly miscast as a pastor. But will we end up in jail at some point? I remember when, during the Obama administration, and I'm not saying that in a pejorative term, I'm just saying it was during his administration that the Supremes, in the infinite wisdom, ruled that hiding in plain sight in the Constitution all along was people's homosexual people's right to be married. Huh? Where is that? Well, they didn't actually cite it. Maybe pursuit of happiness, but that's in the Declaration. I don't know where they came up with it. But not only has it always been there right along, you can't, on religious exemption, say, well, I don't think I'm going to marry somebody. I have verses. I can't be part of that. We adopted a policy here at church where I can't, not only I can't marry homosexuals, like as if I was going to anyway, but I can't even go to a wedding, because I think by my presence I'm saying I believe these nuptials are God-ordained. I just want to tell you, I don't. I'm not hateful. I'm not a hurtful person. But I am a Bible believer. And I don't see that. I see the opposite of that. As a matter of fact, you know, in Romans chapter 1, if we don't acknowledge the Creator as Creator, He's a special judgment against a people that don't acknowledge Him as Creator. You know what that is in Romans 1? Homosexuality. Oh, is that why the country is, yeah. So I know what scriptures are, and I'm not likely, I don't have a lobotomy scheduled, so it's probably I'm going to think that right along. And I will change when the Bible changes, okay? When if the Bible doesn't change, guess who's not changing? So will imprisonment be part of, because every time, I remember Ken talking about that, and for a short time he said, why are you marrying anybody? Nobody. Go see a justice of the peace. And then he thought better of it and said, well, you know, if my future is, I don't know if they'll throw anyone in jail. They'll probably just fine you for like $1 million or something. Several times, you know, someone has emailed me and said, we want to be married in your church. We've been by a church. Oh, it's so picturesque and so, and I thought like, what are you talking about? And I say the same thing every time. Come to church this Sunday and we'll talk about it. And that's happened 3 or 4 times and they haven't come yet. And I think they're trying to make me let's attack this fool and get one of them lawyers from the, and I'm going to be like the cake baker in Colorado who get fined like $1 billion, something like that. What if it happens? What if it means going to jail? It's easy now to talk about and say, I don't care. I'm going to do what God's called me to do. But I don't want to go to jail. I'll tell you that right now. And kind of like, I don't think I'm claustrophobic or anything, but I don't want to find out. I don't want to be in jail. Can I promise you, if following Christ, you're never ever going to go to jail? I don't know that. I mean, listen, I really don't know that. Is he worth suffering for? Or are we going to just go along to get along? Oh, somewhere, scourgings, bonds, imprisonments, they were stoned. Again, Paul, they were sawn asunder. Who was sawn asunder? Historically, Josephus tells us that the prophet Isaiah was put in a hollow log that was sawn in half under the orders of Manasseh, the evil king of Judah. That's a grisly way to go, right? Saw teeth chewing on you and you're just, and of course you're in this log, you can't move or protect yourself any way, shape, or form. You just gotta, that would be an ouchy kind of thing. It's not a more revered name than Isaiah. We're going to die. You want to die being sawed in two, or you want to die inch at a time in some hospital where they're putting all kinds of drugs and you don't even know where you are or what. And if God's called me to die that way, whatever he wants, I'd rather die some glorious way. But if I'm dying a little at a time, I want to die like a man of God would die, being faithful to God the whole time. Don't you? Have you thought about it? They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, they were tempted, they were slain with the sword, they wandered about in sheepskins, goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented. So, you know, we have these wonderful delivered from the mouth of lions, and we have the stone sawn asunder, wandering about in sheepskins, goatskins. We don't get to select. Faith may be to the glory of God in a way where he delivers us, or maybe to the glory of God in the way that we suffer for God. It's his call. Now you can pray. I suggest you do. But there's no suggestion box in heaven in the sense of God saying, like, okay, what should I do in this situation? He's never at a loss of what to do. He really isn't. And your life may be glorious and good and wonderful, or maybe a very hard struggle. What do you do? Well, if it's glorious and good and wonderful and you're being delivered and turning to turning these armies to flight and all this stuff, you're going to get there by faith. And if it's sawn asunder or imprisoned or cruel mockings or scourgings, it's still faith. In either one of those situations, you're going to need faith. Without faith, it's impossible to please him. The outcome, we'll let him worry about that. Oh, these people, they're off scouring. No, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. God said the world is not worthy of them. It's not like they're not worthy to be alive. You see, there's a little bit of a switch that God pulled there. Because we think, put them away, throw them in jail, stone them, cut them in two. The world that they belong to isn't worthy to have them, is what God's take on it is in verse 38. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. All of these, from Cain and Abel, to Samuel and all the prophets, all of these have obtained a good report. Samson, is a man of faith. He died faithful. He repented. David, a good report. David's a man after God's own heart. He wrote like 73 of the Psalms. He's a good guy. He's the standard. When God later on looks at a king, he said, but he didn't, have the heart of David. Or he was as faithful as David was. David becomes the standard of all the other kings. These all have attained a good report. That's what we want. We want God to speak good of us. We want a good report card. I said it several times, right? Verse 2, faith, for by it the elders obtained a good report. Verse 30, and these all having obtained a good report through faith received not the promise. God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. What is that talking about? Us, you, me, church. God has provided some better thing for us, that they without us, Old Testament saints, shouldn't be complete, perfect. Us and them together are the perfect, but the complete is probably a better way to say that. Chapter 12, verse 1. Now, don't just relax. I'm going to look at, just to make the connection. Wherefore, seeing we are encompassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses. What are you talking about? I'm talking about Samson, of Jephthah, of Barak, of David, of Moses, of Abraham, of Sarah, and Rahab. We're encompassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses. Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us. You're on the field. You're in the gladiatorial combat, or you're just running a race. Let's just make it a race, a marathon. Who's in the crowd? All the Old Testament saints. And they are cheering you on. They're saying, yes, you can do it. And them and us together complete all God's redeemed. And they are examples of faith. Well, I'm a New Testament Christian. I don't need... Oh, yeah. It's the same faith. It's the same God. It's the same trust in the same God. And that's what it's all... And we'll pick this up next week when we get to chapter 12. Okay. I hope that our study in Romans 11, by the way, we're not finished yet, is... been a real benefit to us. I really hope that's the case. Okay, let's stand our worship leader. She's going to send us out of here in song.